Jason Matera here, back with you, guest hosting for Jason Rants. A little bit about me before we delve into hour three of the program. 2 hours already in the can. I've been covering politics as a journalist for more than a decade, as an author, as a radio host on television. Recently, got off a television show with Warner Brothers called Crime Watch Daily. It was how we were going after criminals of all stripes. And a very successful Emmy-nominated show was a part of. And now, well, we have other projects in the can as well. But when I get the opportunity, and when Rance invites me, I guest host for him. And my goal is always a modest one. My goal, Peyton, I don't know if I filled you in, producer Peyton, of my goal every time I fill in for Rance. And that is not to lose his audience. His entire audience.
That's a solid goal.
Solid goal, right?
I think I could manage that. I think it would be hard to lose his audience. He's got a really strong following, and I think the people like Rance. The text line seems to like Rance, but I think I might be the person that could push him away.
Well, I don't want to be that person.
No, you're in the clear.
As the guest, I don't want to. So my goal, and it would be hard to... It would hard to live up to that goal, right? It would if to fail on that goal would you really should never be in radio. Anyway, that's my modest goal, is not to lose Rance's audience. Also, I do want to get under his skin, though.
Rance's?
This is what you got to do. This is what you got to do. Pay producer, and those of you, you can text in, right? The None Better Text Tax Resolution Hotline, 800-465-8770. So when Rance is back here, you just got to say, and unsolicited, you can bring this up, Peyton. You can say, you know what? People were, they were writing into the text line saying that Matera just has better hair than you.
Oh, his first day back, I'm going to ask him where Matera is. When he comes back on Monday, I'm going to look at him dead in the eye.
But then you have to say, hey, man, people were saying that he has better hair. Now, for the record, I think Rance has better hair.
Right.
Rance takes meticulous care of his, I have short hair, but he takes meticulous care of his hair. So get under his skin, just say, well, I think Matera, yeah, better hair.
Undoubtedly. That's bound to happen.
That will hurt the ego.
I might get fired, but that's all right.
Well, no, you can just say, this is what people were saying. Well, I don't want to get you fired. All right. I don't want to get fired either. So we're going to stick to the format of the show and continue with what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
Let's get political. So Nancy Pelosi was, of course, obviously speaking about the impeachment. That's all their wall-to-wall coverage. And whether that's a smart political move, I don't think so, is a separate vein of conversation. But anyway, she's having a sit-down on Good Morning America with George Stephanopoulos, who has gone through his own impeachment proceedings, right, with the president. He was in the president's vaunted war room back in the 90s. And now Stephanopoulos tries to pretend like he's this even-handed reporter just offering news and insight. And most of the time, the guy's a hack. However, every once in a while, he will challenge a Democrat lie. Every once. So when it happens, it's important to highlight. The context of this conversation he's having with Pelosi is Adam Schiff, who is the head of the Intelligence Committee. Now, Adam Schiff beclowned himself royally last week during the hearing with the deputy or the director of national security. Adam Schiff opens up, both the committee chairs have their opening statements, and Adam Schiff says he is reading the transcript of the phone conversation that Donald Trump had with the President Zelensky of Ukraine. And Adam Schiff is just making stuff up. I mean, Schiff is just, it's a lot of Schiff he's throwing. Just making stuff up. Making stuff up. And if you're, he never said he was making stuff up. Later on, he said it was a parody. He's communicating. If you just turned onto C-SPAN or one of the cable news shows and you're watching this, you're thinking that, man, Donald Trump really got caught red-handed here. I mean, this is bad stuff. Turns out the whole thing was a lie. He's just fabricating and making it up. So this is the context of what was taking place when Stephanopoulos starts to ask some uncomfortable questions to Nancy Pelosi.
I know you support Chairman Schiff, but was it right for him to have that dramatic interpretation of the president's transfer of the phone call at the hearing last week?
I want the American people to know what that phone call was about. I want them to hear it. So, yeah, it's fair. It's sad. But it's using the president's own words. So if he's...
Well, those weren't the president's words. It was an interpretation of the president's words. So saying he made this up.
He did not make it up.
Well, he did make it up. That's the thing. Schiff made it up. He made up the whole thing. He made up this conversation. That's why Donald Trump is calling him, saying he's guilty of treason. And people are calling that he stepped down from his committee chair assignment because he literally fabricated, spun it out of whole cloth, the conversation with Zelensky that never took place. I don't even think Pelosi knows this. I mean, we're going to listen to this again. It sounded like Pelosi, Schiff, later on said that, well, I was just for dramatic effect. I was recounting what I imagine the conversation sounded like. Well, guess what? We don't have to imagine anything. We don't have to satirize anything here. We have the damn transcript. And Pelosi, it seems like she does not even know Schiff was making the stuff up for what he said, dramatic effect, which in itself is just, I mean, unconscionable that you would do this as a politician. And lie, I mean, this is just a flagrant lie. But listen to this, Pelosi doesn't even know it was a lie.
What's trending?
I know you support Chairman Schiff, but was it right for him to have that dramatic interpretation of the president's transfer of the phone call at the hearing last week?
I want the American people to know what that phone call was about. I want them to hear it. So, yeah, it's fair. It's sad. But it's using the president's own words. So if he's...
Well, those weren't the president's words. It was an interpretation of the president's words. They're saying he made this up.
He did not make it up.
But, I mean, that's what he did. He did make it up. And it wasn't even... I mean, for Stephanopoulos, I need to say, well, there was an interpretation of the... You don't need to interpret the president's words. You either read... You read them. It either says... Remember, the left... And they didn't think this one through. They jumped. They literally jumped the gun, as a cliche go. They were far ahead and bit off more than they can chew. So they presented this information, this whistleblower complaint. They presented this phone call as a smoking gun to presidential corruption. It turned out that it wasn't Donald Trump who initially mentioned Joe Biden. It was Zelensky who mentioned Joe Biden. And when Donald Trump was asking about a favor, right, the big favor, it was all help getting to the bottom of election interference in 2016, specifically who was setting what would believe to be now setting up Donald Trump's campaign as being in collusion with Russia. What were the origins of that, the genesis of that, and what part did Ukraine play in it? Specifically, he's talking about the group, the analyst company CrowdStrike that supposedly analyzed the DNC server to see who hacked into it, and then the FBI just took this group CrowdStrike at their word and didn't analyze it themselves. So Donald Trump is asking for that, and so what? Who can? All right, we should get to the bottom. We should know. We have a right to know the genesis of the spying that did take place on a presidential campaign. But for Nancy Pelosi to say, well, he was just, Adam Schiff was just repeating the president in his own words. You know what's bad? When George Stephanopoulos has to, and you know he doesn't want to step in. He doesn't want to step in and correct Nancy Pelosi. He doesn't want to step in and defend, look like he's defending the president in any way. But this was so bad, blatant. This was so egregious. And it's as though Nancy Pelosi had no idea what was going on. She may be under the impression, I mean, she ain't a spring chicken. She's up there. Maybe she's under the false pretenses under the wrong context of what this impeachment is all about. Someone may have told her, oh, look, this was my interpretation of what the president said. And the interpretation could be disconnected to reality. But it's the reality that makes sense for Nancy Pelosi. And she doesn't even know. By the way, I love that she's the face of the Democrat Party. I love that Adam Schiff is the face of the Democrat Party. I love that Jerry Nadler is the face. I love that AOC is the face. And Rashida Tlaib is the face. And that crazy one from Somalia. How am I missing her name? What's her name? Someone text into the 800-465-8770. How am I missing? How am I misremembering? I don't know. It's going to come to me. The one who's always whining and complaining. Anyway, the squad. But I'm glad this is happening because it shows you the desperation. They're not looking to actually fight on. They can't fight on the policy front, right? Americans agree. There was actually a study. I'll get to this over the break. We'll continue this. What's trending? Okay, Ilhan Omar, thank you for reminding. I forgot her name. And then you have Ilana Presley from Massachusetts with Rashida Tlaib and AOC, the squad. I'm glad these people are the face of the Democrat Party. But here's the thing. The reason why the left is not fighting on the policy front, that is, Donald Trump proposes this or gets this legislation enacted, and then the Democrats propose something else, and you argue about the merits, and people come to their own conclusion. That's not happening nowadays. And it's why? Because the vast majority of people and a big chunk of independents agree with many of these policies. Thus, the Democrats don't want to fight on a policy front. And this just underscores it. So there was a poll recently. It was one of the primary polling firms that we... And I'll look it up in a second. It's not right in my notes. But I'll get that to you. It's one of the legitimate polls out there. But they did something interesting. They took a group of independents, and they had two sample sizes and sets. And one group of independents, they just had them read off, like... sort of mundane election information, like stops, schedules, and things that weren't really that informative. But then they asked who were they likely to vote for. The other random half of participants read news snippets illustrating specifically the leftward lurch. But it's not even a lurch. It's probably more of like a massive hop at this point, just jump. But the leftward shift of the Democrat Party. So they read some policies from the candidates discussing decriminalizing entry into the border, expanding undocumented illegal alien access to government services, replacing private health insurance with government-run system, and establishing a free public college for all children of the working class. So they're reading snippets, the group of independents. And those group of independents became 6 percentage points less likely to vote for Democrats after reading their policy positions. The independents became less likely. That's why Democrats don't want to fight on this policy front. Because Americans are not down with free health care for illegals. They're not down with have a government complete government takeover, as though the government isn't involved enough in health care. They're not on board with a complete government takeover. They're not on board with forgiving student loans and having taxpayers subsidize loans because some young knucklehead decided he was going to take out a $150,000 college tuition loan to study lesbian dance novels since World War II. Or whatever they're teaching now, how math is racist. Though, independents are actually pretty horrified by these positions. Thus, we get impeachment. Democrats think it's going to be a distraction. Okay, we got a lot more that's trending in the universe.
What's trending in Seattle?
In Seattle. Okay, Peyton, how do you pronounce this company again?
Wajimaya.
Wajimaya.
There you go.
which I just was, I should have, I've heard about it, but I didn't know what it was. Just for those who don't know, what is Wajima Maya?
It's the Japanese superstore. Well, I want to say it's the Asian superstore that you can get all sorts of types of things. It's like, it's Costco in Chinatown, and I love the place.
So it's like Asian Costco?
Kind of, yeah.
Kind of, okay.
It's huge.
I need to go.
It's like a whole experience. You know, give yourself like 2 hours to go there.
Really?
It's a big place.
Okay. It's an activity for my kids. You think they'll be fascinated with it? I took them to Costco for the first time.
Take them to the live fish tanks.
Oh, let them watch
the fish and the crab duke it out.
They love. Okay. Yeah. I have twins. They're not even two yet. And we're finding my wife and I activities to consume the time and keep them active and engaged.
Do you like Asian food?
I love Asian food.
Go check out Wajimaya.
Wajimaya. Wajimaya. Anyway, so the CEO of Wajimaya is a woman by the name of Denise Moraguchi. And she recently sat down with our sister station here on Cairo Radio to give her thoughts on the latest report that was released by the Seattle Business Alliance. This one was called System Failure 2. And part of the highlights were how the city attorney here, Pete Holmes, won't prosecute nearly 50% of the cases. And when he does prosecute a case, it takes him 6 months to file. The revolving door that is happening where people are just going into stores either vandalizing or stealing and terrorizing customers, and nothing is being done about it. Also, the report highlighted how 87 of the original 100 prolific offenders in the last report. So 87, the last report said that 800, there was 100 prolific offenders, and they basically accounted for the vast majority of arrests, and they keep getting arrested. Nothing's being done. So 87 of those original 100 prolific offenders have been booked into jail again more than 220 times. A dozen booked into jail more than five times each. So something that we call this a system breakdown is a system failure. No, this is intentional. It's not a fail. This is the intention of progressives in Seattle, not to put people in jail because they think it is inherently wrong or racist or unjust to prosecute some. We're not going to prosecute or criminalize homeless. We're not going to criminalize theft. We're not going to criminalize vandalism. None of it. Well, it creates unsafe environments. So you have this CEO of Wajimaya. Did I say it right?
Oh, yeah. Nailed it.
There he is. Wajimaya, who sat down with the Candy Mike and Todd show to discuss why her business just gave up reporting crimes to the Seattle Police Department.
Typically, we feel like not a lot happens. I mean, we have run-ins with people that are stealing or have had confrontations with employees or have been disruptive in the store. And, you know, the SPD's called and they're great and they come the next day or the next afternoon, that person is back in the store. So it's difficult to see how, when we do report things, how it's actually contributing to making things better. But we do keep calling. But I think it just shows that we need more resolution. We need a better system. But right now it seems like it's broken. And, you know, someone can steal or have an altercation with someone and nothing really happens.
See, it's not broken. I understand what she's saying. It's not broken, but this is by design. By design, the city attorney. By design, the city council does not want to go after these types of crimes. I mean, can you imagine being the CEO of this superstore here? And people who are arrested for stealing stuff are back in your store the next day? What's going on here? Honestly, what they need is security to offer some street justice. I'm sorry, is that harsh? You have security? Someone is caught stealing? Well, you know, sometimes matters need to be taken into your own hands. If the police won't do anything, well, it's not the police. The police will arrest them. It's the city attorney who is doing diddly squat. And this woman is talking about how much time she has to waste, her and her employees, to report crime after crime after crime, and nothing is being done. Their resources get depleted, both in human capital, time management, and also actual product being lifted from their stores. By the way, that raises the prices on everyone else because they have to recuperate those losses somehow. They recuperate it through you and I, law-abiding citizens, who go and we pay for the stuff that we want. We don't go ahead and steal it. We have respect for private property. Not trying to steal to subsidize our junky habit. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Jason Rants. Oh man, there's a lot more we have to get to. The Joker, the movie. The director has come out and said how he's done making certain types of films because he just can't take the cancel culture anymore. Just can't take these woke betas on Twitter sounding off on everything they don't like because it's not PC enough. Welcome back. Jason Matera here with you, guest hosting for Jason Rants. You know, it's easy to get sucked into the political back and forth, and especially here, if we're paying attention to what's going on in Seattle, it's easy to get depressed with the news cycle. And it almost feels like a never-ending assault and attack on the values we hold dearly. But sometimes there's a story that comes along that just puts it all in perspective and is so moving. And I came across this story late last night, actually. I shared it with my wife this morning, and she was almost tearing up. Just sharing. I didn't even have her watch the associated video or play the audio for her, and you'll hear it yourself. Last year, a Dallas police officer returning from a shift made big headlines because she went in the wrong, she was in her apartment complex, but she went in the wrong apartment. Wasn't hers. She was on the wrong floor. The door is open. She goes in. She sees someone else who she's thinking is in her place. Turns out the guy's in his own place, and she shoots him dead. It was a big race incident. Not that race had anything involved, aside from this woman was white and the man was black. Her name was Amber Guy. Her name is Amber Geiger, and the guy she shot dead, Botham Jean, who would have turned 28 this month. Tragic all around. She blamed it on a tiring shift and not knowing it was her apartment or not. And I didn't pay attention to the trial, but it seems like a reasonable, not that it's a justification, of course, but a reasonable explanation. I doubt she would just go into a random person's apartment and shoot them in her own complex. But still, this was a deadly mistake, and she had to pay. She killed the guy. It was unwarranted, and she's a police officer and should know better. There must be a higher level of accountability. Amber Geiger got 10 years in prison for killing Botham Jean. And there were people who the prosecution was going for 28 years, the number of years he would have been alive if not for his murder. But she ended up only getting 10. After Geiger was sentenced, it was the opportunity for the victim impact statement, and that's the victim's family gets to make a statement to the convicted individual. And I guess in this case, it happened after the convict was sentenced. Many times it happens before, and the judge usually factors this in delivering the sentence, or the jury factors it in delivering a sentence. Brant Jean is the brother of Botham Jean. Brant is 18 years old. He gets up, and there's only two rules for a victim impact statement. No threats and no profanity as you address the individual. Now, Brand Jean did something that was so remarkable. So remarkable, and it embodies forgiveness, and quite honestly, probably has did something that you and I, I'll speak for myself, if I were in this situation, probably would never have wanted to do. And that is not only forgive her from the stand, but also embrace the woman who shot and killed her brother. It was a moving time in court, and I must say, even watching this, even talking about it, even right now, the remarkable integrity, precociousness of this young man, and truly embodied a message of the gospel. Listen.
I think giving your life to Christ would be the best thing that both of them would want you to do. Again, I love you as a person. And I don't wish anything bad on you. I don't know if this is possible, but can I give her a hug, please? Please?
Yes.
They're hugging right now. He's actually hugging the ex-police officer. And both of them are crying it out and hugging it out. The hug went on for, it seemed like a minute, maybe longer. And the guy saying, I don't hate you. I forgive you. I just hope that you find, my brother would want you to find Jesus Christ. I was just amazed by the level of forgive. I mean, this is tough. I mean, we theoretically, it's easy to forgive, right? You can say, oh, I can forgive someone. But in the moment, that raw emotion still there to say, no, not only do I forgive you, I'm going to do it publicly with cameras rolling, but I want to embrace you. I'm going to hug you. The judge is even tearing up. You hear sobs. People who are still in the courtroom are crying. Here you have the victim's family member, the victim's brother, and the one who shot him, hugging, embracing. The judge gets down from the bench, goes over to the victim's family, and says, quote, this is from the Dallas Morning News, says, thank you for the way you modeled Christ. That's what she said to the mom. She walked over front of the defense table where Geiger still sat, crouched over in front of her, still wearing her black robe, and gave her a Bible. So all anyone who is watching on the internet could see this. And the judge said, read this. Geiger was crying and thanked the judge, and the judge responded, ma'am, it's not because I am good, it's because I believe in Christ. None of us are worthy. Forgive yourself. And I just thought that entire exchange with the victim's brother, with the judge, and with the convict at this point, having this conciliatory moment. There was no attitude of retribution, but restoration and reconciliation. And this guy, Botham Jean's brother, Brant Jean, is a hell of a man. And what a story he's able to carry on. And the number of people, and I saw this bouncing around social media, I said, I definitely want to talk about this. Because we live in a society, it's easy. Shoot, I can get sucked into it. It's easy where you want to have retribution. You want to have rights wronged, and you want to take, you know, especially when it comes to this, I've covered crime for years as a journalist. And I've never once, never, I've dozens and dozens and dozens of cases, sat down with so many victims' family members over the years, and not once did I ever hear someone say, I forgive that person. I don't want to hold on to any grudge. In fact, I love them. I wish them the best in prison. I hope they find something they can hold on to, where they can be a better person. That's rare. It to happen. And this family did not make it a racial issue, even though many wanted. There was agitators outside the courtroom screaming like the Al Sharpton chants, no justice, no peace, yada, yada, yada. The whole Black Lives Matter agitators and irritants were outside the courtroom. Inside, the actual victim's family wanted no part of that. They wanted to forgive Amber Geiger publicly and then embrace her and hug. If you have an opportunity, definitely look up the moment on YouTube and have a box of tissues ready, because it certainly is moving. Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Jason Rants. No easy segue into the next topic of conversation, but I did want to get to it because it's the reviews are starting to hit the interwebs. Joker and interviews surrounding the director who said some things that were starting not to be surprising, I guess, because it's coming out. There's such a antipathy towards cancel culture, but we'll get to this Vanity Fair profile, and maybe Hollywood is taking a turn against political correctness. We are back. Jason Matera here in the saddle, guest hosting for Jason Rants while he's away. Doing whatever Jason Rants does while he's away. What does he do? What have you learned about Jason Rants in your 5 weeks here? Nearly on the show.
Let's see. Every night, Jason, he goes home to his apartment. He claims he doesn't cry himself to sleep. He, according to his Instagram story, cooks a different protein every night, and we have to guess the protein. Half the time it looks like turkey, and it's actually chicken. Sometimes he puts tofu up there, even though it's, turkey.
Tofu?
He might be a tofu guy. I don't know. Yeah.
Guys should not be eating tofu. You don't eat tofu, do you?
I don't eat tofu, but Jason's bougie, if you know what bougie is.
Yeah, but tofu increase. Does he drink soy?
I don't know. He drinks.
Is he a soy latte guy or an almond milk latte guy or real?
Never
milk
seen him
latte?
With a latte. I okay. see him with some Red Bull.
Red Bull as a radio host. Yep.
He does Red Bull and Coke Zero. I think Coke Zero.
Zero. I've never had Coke Zero. Is it taste disgusting?
No, I like Coke Zero.
What's the difference between a Coke Zero and a Diet Coke?
Diet Coke, I would say, is a lot more bubbly. It's a lot more fizzy. Okay. And there's kind of a bitter taste at the end of Diet Coke where you don't get that with Coke Zero. I think it's a lot more smooth.
Coke Zero is smoother.
Yeah. And that's not even an endorsement. I just like Coke Zero.
Interesting.
Are you a Pepsi guy or a Coke guy?
I'm not a soda guy.
Okay.
I can't tell you the last time I drank imbibed soda. Once you turn 30, then the metabolism starts to slow a little bit, so you have to watch. You still got many years left. So
yeah.
My advice to you, Peyton, is eat whatever the hell you want now.
My metabolism's trash. It's bad.
Already?
Yeah, already, yeah.
Oh, man. At 30, man, my wife told me I didn't marry a fat kid, so she put me on a diet.
Yeah, yeah. I do the same thing like last year. I dropped 60 pounds last year.
You dropped 60 pounds?
Yeah, believe it or not.
What was your secret?
Eat like 1,200 calories a day and work out
so
for like
just
2 hours.
A caloric deficit.
Yeah, and then I worked out like an animal for like, it probably took me like 4 months to drop that
60
much weight.
Pounds. What, did you eliminate a food source? Did you eliminate like dessert time of eating?
I stopped doing dairy. I did like whenever I needed milk, I went to almond milk.
Okay.
It less fatty.
Good choice.
And then I did a lot of chicken, a little bit less of red meat, but when I did do like the ground beef, I didn't do the 80-20. I did like the 93-7 or the 97-3. Yeah.
And you curtail carbs?
I didn't watch carbs. It was just calories.
It was just calories.
And then I switched from regular Red Bull to sugar-free Red Bull.
So were you measuring the calories? You were.
I was trying
just
to
like
keep,
kind of eyeballing it.
Kind of eyeballing it. You know, one serving with dinner, I won't go back for like seconds. I'd be trying to keep like these 500 calorie meals. And I do like two meals a day. Do intermediate fasting.
Yeah. That's a big thing.
Yeah. It worked for me.
Fasting.
Yeah.
16:8.
I was, I wouldn't eat until about, like, 12:30 or 1 every day. I'd skip breakfast.
Yeah?
And then
What was the last meal?
I would eat 3 hours before I'd go to sleep. I was going to bed at about 11 p.m., so I'd eat about 7 or 8.
Oh, so you were getting a good 16 to 17 hours of a fasting period.
Yeah. It was solid. It was good.
Did you work out during the fasting period?
I worked out first thing in the morning, so yeah, I'd wake up,
so
I'd go to the gym.
Your body is then burning the fat as fuel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's impressive, man, 60 pounds.
Yeah, I was big. I was 225.
I just had to give up ice cream.
And that's a rough one.
That was a rough one. I have such a sweet tooth that I can't have it in the house. I can't, when I'm shopping, I cannot buy any type of dessert because I have no willpower. If there's a ice cream or there's a package of cookie, I'm going to go just destroy the whole thing. So I just, I just don't keep it in the fridge at all. All right. The Joker is going to be out on, I guess, either tonight. Yeah, tonight starts.
Yeah.
Tonight. And it's one of these movies that is being panned before people even see it. It's being panned for a variety of reasons because it doesn't comport directly with progressive orthodoxy and progressive views. So much so that the director, Todd Phillips, he's the one, I didn't know this recently, but he directed The Hangover, awesome movie, Road Trip, and Old School. I think Old School is one of my favorite movies.
Old School is incredible.
It is. I have it, and I will watch it from time to time. It is just so good. And
the blow dart scene is the best.
Yeah, that is pretty good. Yeah, that's right. So, Todd Phillips says, he talks to Vanity Fair, which is no conservative outlet, and says that he's done making these type of, I guess, bro humor flicks. No more Hangovers, no more Road Trips, no more Old School. Why? Because of cancel culture. Quote, this is from him, Phillips, who's not a conservative, says, go try to be funny nowadays with this woke culture. There were articles written about my comedies about why comedies don't work anymore. I'll tell you why, because all the effing funny guys are like, F this! Because they don't want to have Twitter agitators and Twitter warriors lobbing these, oh my gosh, I am so offended. I can't believe you said that. We're seeing it with Dave Chappelle now. Dave Chappelle goes after the people you're not supposed to go after. He's a true, genuine comedian. He'll make fun of anything he finds funny, especially political correctness. Eddie Murphy's getting ready to come back to stand-up. Same concerns. He's not intentionally trying to offend people, but people are so easily offended. At some point, Hollywood... Like, see, now Hollywood is having a clash with woke culture. And who's going to win? It's going to be interesting. Celebrity culture or woke culture? Jason Matera here, guest hosting for Jason Rants. It's always a privilege. I want to thank producer Peyton. I want to thank you for tuning in. And want to thank Rants for giving me the opportunity once he's traveling and once he's gone. But he'll be back. You want to follow me, you can do so on social media. Twitter is at Jason Matera, 2 T's, 1 R. Or on Facebook, Jason Matera. Or on Instagram, Jason Matera. Or the website, Jason Matera. .com. Peace, love, and granola goodness. See you next time.